First up, Naomi Munawira speaks on her new book, Island of a Thousand Mirrors, and the Sri Lankan history that inspired it, with Tara Darabji and No-No Girl from Apex Express.
I'm Tara Darabji with No No Girl. We are joined in studio live by Naomi Munawira to discuss her recently published novel, Island of a Thousand Mirrors, which delves fearlessly into the reality of the civil war in Sri Lanka. The civil war in Sri Lanka lasted for 26 years and left tens of thousands dead. Naomi Munawira was born in Sri Lanka, grew up in Nigeria, and now lives in Oakland.
Thank you, you guys. It's great to be here.
So, Naomi, we just gave a short synopsis of how you ended up in the Bay Area, but could you flesh that out and tell us your family's migration story?
Yeah, it's such a fascinating story, and I think it's a really common one. My family left Sri Lanka in 1976, and we left not because so much of the war was starting, but there were rumblings of it, and the economic situation in Sri Lanka was quite bad. So we actually moved to Nigeria, and I lived there till I was 12, when there was a military coup, at which point we then moved to California. And I was 12 and went to college and high school and all that in California.
How old were you when you left Sri Lanka?
I was 3.
You were 3?
Yeah.
And do you remember growing up there at all, or is it just like...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So we lived in Nigeria, but every year for a month, we spent a month in Sri Lanka. So I was really familiar with what it meant to be there. I didn't live there, but I had very close connections. My father's family is all still in Sri Lanka and went through the war there.
And this is important for the novel. What's your ethnicity or...
So I'm actually ethnically Sinhala, which is the majority race. The war was fought between the majority Sinhala and the minority Tamils.
And Naomi Munawira, Island of a Thousand Mirrors is your first novel. Congratulations on getting it published. And why were you compelled to write about the civil war in Sri Lanka?
That's such a good question. You know, Toni Morrison has this great quote, which is, if there's a book you want to read and it hasn't been written, you have to write it. And I think that was really the impetus for writing this book. I'm a huge reader. I read South Asian literature for years and years and years. And, you know, that this story just wasn't told. I read everything. I mean, there are some stories as Anil's Ghost by Michael Ondaatje, of course. There's a few other books. There's one called July. But on the larger stage of literature, the war was just missing. And I know that that's not going to be the case anymore. As people get used to the fact that it's over, the war ended in 2009, there will be more and more stories. But when I was growing up and an adolescent and a young adult, this story was really missing. And I felt a desire to read this book, which is what I think drove me to write it.
And why do you think the stories of Sri Lanka and the war are so untold?
Oh, wow. Well, because the people that lived through it were living through it. You know, they were going through daily brutality and bloodshed, and, you know, not active warfare, then they were going through economic hardship. There wasn't a lot of space to step back and think about it or try to assimilate your experience in terms of writing. So I think I was really poised in this sort of blessed place between proximity and distance. I was safe enough because I lived in America, but, you know, we went there every year for a month, so I got to witness some of what was going on.
You are a writer who's experienced a lot of, you were at VONA, and what was the other writing?
Squaw Valley.
Squaw
Community
Valley.
Of writers, yes.
So what kind of support did you have in writing this book?
You know, I started writing this book 10 years ago. I quit grad school because I really wanted to write a novel instead of read other people's novels. And for the first about 9 years, it was just me in a room writing. So I didn't show my work to anyone. I wasn't part of any writing community. And then about a year ago, maybe more than that, maybe 2 years ago, my partner actually said, well, you know, you better start showing it to people. And I said, oh, no, I don't want to do that. But it's so necessary. And the first thing I did was a workshop at Kearney Street, the IWL, which was fantastic. And then Then immediately after that, I did Vona, which was really great, which is the Writers of Color workshop at Berkeley, and just amazing support, amazing feedback, amazing people in my class.
That's where I met you, Naomi.
Yes. That's where I met Tara. Zizi Packer was our instructor, and it was just absolutely phenomenal. From then, I went on to Squaw Valley Community of Writers, and I've been there 2 years in a row now. And again, like, incredible support.
And, you know, you were talking a little bit, Naomi, about closeness to the subject, and it really comes through in the novel. There's a deep intimacy, not just with the characters, but with the landscape. We get the food, the texture, the scenery. I definitely was transported very much by your writing. And you talked about being able to return to Sri Lanka every year, growing up. And, you know, I think for a lot of people that I talk with that write about their own conflict, that are going through militarized communities, war zones, civil war, it carries a different lens. And I think as a reader, it allows us into that world, which is amazing and intimate and sort of the hand that I want to hold as I go on this journey. But I know for the writer, it's very challenging at times to write about your own conflict. What were some of the most challenging parts for you about writing about this conflict?
So the novel follows two families, one Tamil, one Sinhala, as they sort of negotiate the war. The Tamil family actually lives in the north of the country, which is a militarized zone, or was a militarized zone. There's active fighting. This is an area that I actually have never been to, because that entire northern section was closed off to everybody till 2009. So it's not a place I've been to. I had to do an incredible amount of research and then sort of try to enter my character, who is eventually becomes a Tamil tiger, part of the, you know, resistance or terrorist group, depending on how you see it. And that part was incredibly difficult. It was difficult in terms of like imagining what it would be to live through that conflict daily. It was also incredibly emotionally taxing to just, you know, as you said, hold their hand and go through just really bloody, horrible scenes, you know, villages being massacred on both sides. Just really hard, hard things.
I think that's one of the things I really appreciated about your work in your novel, Naomi, was that you went into both sides of the civil war and you gave firsthand accounts of it. And the Tamil woman that we were able to follow does become, you know, she gets super hardcore and becomes like a suicide bomber, essentially, in it. And we go through this journey with her. It was a really intense journey. And you could see that there was, I mean, it was a really deliberate choice, I felt, on the part of yourself to take on that perspective and humanize it. Why did you go for that?
I've always been really interested in this question. What makes a person willing to blow themselves up? I mean, what cause is great enough? You know, what justification can there be for killing yourself and killing all these other people? The Tamil Tigers had 378 suicide bombers, more than anyone else in the world. And what this meant is these people were willing to die for a cause in a way that, like, no other international movement has had. And I really wanted to understand what that meant. I really wanted to know who this person might be as an actual person, not just a statistic, not just, you know, a number. I really wanted to get into her psyche, what, and the events that might have led her to this place.
Do you think now's a good time for a passage?
Oh, sure. So I'm going to read a passage from early in the book, and this is immediately after colonization, and it sort of sets up what will happen with the conflict. Behind the retreating Englishman on the new nation's flag is poised a stylized lion, all curving flank and ornate muscle, a long cruel sword gripped in its front paw. It is the ancient symbol of the Sinhala, who believe that they are descended from the lovemaking between an exiled Indian princess and a large jungle cat. A green stripe represents that small and much tossed Muslim population. An orange stripe represents the larger Tamil minority. But in the decades that are coming, race riots and discrimination will render the orange stripe inadequate. It will be replaced by a new flag, On its face, a snarling tiger, all bared fang and bristling whisker. If the idea of militancy is not conveyed strongly enough, dagger-clawed paws burst forth while crossed rifles rear over the cat's head. A rifle-toting tiger, a sword-gripping lion, this is a war that will be waged between related beasts.
And that's Naomi Munawara reading from her novel, Island of a Thousand Mirrors. Naomi, so how has your family received this novel?
My parents have been amazing. They've been hugely, hugely advocating it. So I've been quite proud of how they received it. My parents are telling all their friends and, you know, sort of saying my daughter wrote this book, which is great because, you know, it's a difficult book. It's not an easy book. I'm really proud of how they received it so far. And all my extended family, I have family in LA, I have family in Sri Lanka. The novel's actually not out in Sri Lanka, so I'm waiting to see what that will feel like. But an amazing part of this is I've been contacted by the Sri Lanka diaspora all over the world. And people are like, I want to read your book, I want to teach your book. And it's just amazing to see how that diaspora gets word and then sort of comes together.
Well, have you, you were saying that you're Sinhalese, so your family is Sinhalese. Have you heard responses from Tamil folks?
I've had Tamil folks. I actually am very close to certain Tamil family members. There's some intermingling in my family, and the reviews have been really positive so far.
And in terms of the larger community, have you gotten any backlash or any response from the novel?
Not quite yet, but I'm sure there will be. I'm hoping everybody reads the novel before they sort of take a position on either side. I know it's sensitive material, but my point in writing this book was to show that, you know, neither side is innocent. Neither side is heroes. The Sinhala military was just absolutely as brutal as the Tamil Tigers. The Tamil Tigers started off as a freedom fighting force and then devolved into terrorism, and they were conscripting child soldiers and, you know, suicide bombings and all of that. And the military responded with just as much just pure bloodshed. So my whole point in writing this book was to show that there are people, like actual people, caught in the middle of this who didn't ask for it, who suffered, who are not talked about. So I really have no, I'm not leaning towards either side. I'm just trying to tell the story of people.
I think that really came across in the novel was that you get to go into these. And I also liked that it's about two families and they share a house. So you have the Tamil on the top and the Sinhalese on the bottom, and you see the relationships evolve. And I mean, the book was a total pleasure to read. I have to say that I was like trying to think about the metaphor, and I decided it was like dark chocolate mousse because it was really smooth. Yeah, it was so smooth going down, but it, you know, it had a dark edge and it was bitter. And it was also very sensual, and, you know, you wanted to go back for more. So I definitely want to compliment you on it, and just the artistry of it. And within that, though, you know, there is, I think that what makes it so powerful was the intimacy that you have with the characters. And they're sort of, you know, you're dealing with this war and the civil war, but within all of it, there's the individual people, and you get to go through their love, their heartbreak, and everything. And you really show love affairs that cross the ethnic divides. And why did you really decide to show the conflict through the heart and through the love relationships?
You know, you can read a history book about all this stuff, and, you know, you can know all the dates, and, you know, you might come away knowing dates and numbers. You might know how many people died, but you're not going to get a sense of what happened. And I really wanted to show that these were real people, although I made them up, so fictional real people. You know, real people going through something really hard. And I'm glad you brought up the love affairs and all of that, because this isn't just a book about a horrible, hard war. It's also about falling in love and like immigrating and so many, many things. And, you know, the story is really, it's really human. It's about people. It's not about these dates and times and numbers. It's like if you want someone to remember, you want them to remember how it felt. So that's what I was trying to get at. And I love your analogy of dark chocolate because I'm a big fan of that. So
it hit the spot.
Yes.
Naomi, through the end of the novel, one of your main characters leaves Sri Lanka again and comes to the Bay Area. But she's suffered a terrible loss and wants to disengage from her past in the war. Your book does the opposite. It drops us into the heart of the conflict and allows your reader in. So why do you think it's important to preserve the memory of the civil war in Sri Lanka?
I think the question of war is such an important one for all of us to grasp. I mean, we are in America, right? And, you know, we have our fingers in all kinds of wars all around the world. And I think it's important for us to have some understanding of what that feels like. I mean, this book is set in Sri Lanka, but it could just as easily be about Colombia or Nigeria or South Africa or, you know, any other place that went through conflict. I mean, this is not the only war. It's not the only civil war. So it's just very important for us, I think, even as, you know, Americans, to have an understanding of what that feels like.
Naomi, talk to us a little more about that concept of war and being in America, because I think that's one of the things that sort of fascinates me a lot is I see a lot of migration stories heading out of conflict zones. People come to America because of that safety, because there is not the active civil war, not an active war zone in that way. And yet there's, you kind of touched on it a little bit in terms of there's the ironic part of it is that there's that creation of war also. And so how did you grapple with that? Being a migrant, coming here and being in the safety, but also knowing that the country that was keeping you safe was causing a similar war for people around the world?
Yeah, it's a really, you know, loaded kind of question and place to be in. When I was writing this book, I had a lot of questions about authenticity. I think I actually talked about that at VONA. Tara, you were there. And I really wasn't sure if I could write this story from this place of safety, being sort of, you know, safely in the Bay Area and having my writer life and writing about these people that went through really horrific circumstances. You know, and it's just a complicated, complicated thing to tease out. My book was actually originally published in Sri Lanka, and is now available in several different countries. And that was a really big deal to me because it meant that people that had lived through it, gone through that war, sort of felt that I had gotten it somewhat right. So that was a really big deal because, you know, it would have been felt very different to initially publish in America, you know, where people didn't live through it and would have a very outside idea of what happened. So that was really a huge big deal for me.
And how did you handle, I mean, I think a lot of writers hit up against that. I know that was one of my initial blocks, was that question of authenticity. Mm-hmm. And do I have a right to this story? And I mean, for me, I kind of came to the place where I was like, I didn't choose the story, the story chose me. So at this point, I'm going to tell it. What were some of the ways that you were able to embrace the story that chose you?
There are so many voices that say don't write, right? Mm-hmm. there's a question of authenticity. There's a question of like, is it too intense? You know, can you speak for other people? I didn't live through the war. Can I speak? There are so many questions. There's so many doubts. There's, you know, as a writer, all you writers out there know there's like tremendous, tremendous self-doubt. And you just have to tell them all to shut up and you have to put your fingers on the keyboard and try to tell the story as best you can. So, yeah, it's just a matter of just doing it really, you know?
And what was your experience? You were saying that initially you were going back to Sri Lanka every year and the war was going on then. So, and I think that there was like a terrorist bombing at one of the airports once. So what consciousness did you have of the war when you would return back to Sri Lanka?
There were various terrorist bombings. There was the central bank bombing. There was bus bombings all over the place. As you said, the airport bombing. Let's see. I actually would go back every year for a month until I was, an adult. And then I haven't been back for quite a while. When I was about 14, I was actually in a bombing, not a fatal one. I think there might have been some people hurt, but it was considered one of the smaller bombings. It was much smaller. Basically, what happened is my aunt's a horticulturalist, and we went to a flower show. She was showing her orchids, and my whole family was there. It was a big open sort of stadium, and there might have been about 300 people there. My cousins and I went outside for ice cream, and there was a bombing inside the building. And then they were bringing out people on stretchers, you know, covered in blood. As I said, no fatalities, but people did get hurt. We went back inside, and there was shrapnel all in the walls right where we had been. So that's the closest I got. The sort of interesting thing about this is, you know, that night we went to dinner, we joked about it, and I really understood at that moment what it meant to sort of live with this as a daily possibility. My family was so sort of cavalier about it because they had to be. You couldn't treat this as a huge big deal because you wouldn't be able to live your life. And I really got that. Okay, this is how you live. Like, this thing happened, you kind of joke about it. And it's kind of funny. I mean, it wasn't funny at all. But I could think that it wasn't funny from, like, the safety of America. If you're living in it, you have to do whatever you can to get through it. We did find out later that it wasn't LTT, it wasn't Tamil Tiger related. So it was some sort of internal conflict. But, you know, it was a bombing. People did get hurt. So I kind of got a little sliver of a glimpse of what it might be like.
I mean, and it's not just the terrorist bombings. Like, when I went back, I was in Sri Lanka
right.
with Naomi. And what was that, 2002? It was after 9/11. And so the activities of the Tamil had died down because of Bush's, like, war on terrorism.
Yes.
But yet, still on the Western side, there were people walking around with, I don't know, what kind of guns they were, but they were huge.
AK-47.
Yeah. Right? And so without even having the necessarily the threat of terrorism, you still see militarization everywhere. And
yes.
That's an everyday kind of thing. And you see amputees everywhere.
Yes, absolutely. The amputees are from landmines. I think on that trip we were being stopped and people would look at our passports. There was one trip in the 80s, I think around 84, 85, where we were stopped from the airport to our house 14 times by the military with the guns and all of that. And we were safe because we have the magic blue passport, right? But Tamil kids were being disappeared. You know, if you were Sinhala in the north, you would be disappeared. There was all kinds of stuff going on. So absolutely militarized country.
And what was your process like growing up in a Sinhala sort of family? And then, I mean, by the time we get to this novel, it's, in my opinion, a very evolved sort of frame. You're able to go into both and represent them actively. And how did you make that transition where you were able to understand the Tamil side of the conflict as well?
Okay, so my controversial story, I suppose.
Was it a love affair?
Yes, absolutely. Of course, right?
Well, love always finds the way, like...
Right? Of course. When I was 16, I had a Tamil boyfriend, and we dated for 8 years, from 16 to 24. Yes, long time. My family did not know about it for quite a while because, you know, I was young and it was forbidden. So yes, forbidden love. Mm-hmm. And I became quite a part of that family. I became sort of a fixture in their household, and I'm still quite close to certain members of that family. The relationship didn't last, but sort of the larger relationships absolutely lasted. And I got to hear the stories, you know. His family left Sri Lanka in 83. They actually had been there on vacation, but the larger family left overnight because there were riots in 83. It was called Black July, and it was a program of basically government-sponsored violence against Tamils. And thugs came to the house and, you know, would kill you if you were Tamil. So his family fled with just clothes and I think 3 suitcases. And just being part of that family, I got to hear the stories and, feel very close to them and become humanized in a way that I wouldn't have had much access to if that hadn't happened.
I know you have another section for us, or two, that you're going to read for us from your novel, Island of a Thousand Mirrors.
Sure. Let's see. So, coming to America or war stuff?
Let's stay with the war stuff, because okay. That's what we're talking about.
Okay, great. So this is a section about an event that happened in 1981 that was sort of part of the reason that the Tamil Tigers rose and became very powerful. And I talk about a city called Jaffna, which is in the north of the country and predominantly Tamil. In Jaffna, Sinhala policemen and paramilitary stormed the old Tamil library, ripped books from the shelves, set fire to the mountains of paper. The conflagration shoots high into the sky, a funeral pyre visible for miles, a warning to all who can see. For weeks afterwards, torn, blackened pages fly over the lagoons and salt marshes, the onion and chili fields. They lodge in the branches of palmyra trees, float into houses and buildings, entangled in the barbed wire fences and the limbs of gods soaring over the coalwells. The storm of words finds its way into cooking pots and outhouses. The ground is littered with fragments of angular Tamil. In Colombo on television, we watch a politician from the UNP. He shakes his head to and fro, his double chin swaying. He says, "If there is discrimination in this land, which is not their Tamil homeland, then why try to stay here? Why not go back to India, where there would be no discrimination? There are your kovils and gods. There you have your culture, education, universities. There you are masters of your own fate." From upstairs, we hear nothing but silence. When I see him next, Shiva is brisk, his usual high spirits deflated. When I ask him what is wrong, his voice is cold. "They burnt 95,000 manuscripts," he says. "Your people burnt up our history." I stare at him, not knowing what to say, but already he has turned from me and is running up the staircase.
It's the voice of Naomi Munawira reading from her novel Island of a Thousand Mirrors, delving in to the civil war in Sri Lanka and the cross-sections at which families and hearts were broken, pulled apart, rearranged, and fled and came back together. And Naomi, you know, you in your novel really are fearless in a lot of the things that you delve into. There's some, I think that your approach to, I mean, I felt like as your reader that I had to go through some things that were, they weren't too hard for me, but they definitely made me want to cry. And I was like, oh no, you know, it's like, okay, but it's the reality of the war. And what gives you the courage as a writer to push that edge, to really challenge people to have those experiences that take them out of their comfort zone? I know, like, I've been in a workshop with you where some people are like, it's too much. And I'm always like, it's not too much. It's real. If it's real, give it to them. But like, why do you take it at that level?
People have to live this, you know, people have to live it. And if you tell it well enough, I think it's okay to go there. I think you can challenge readers. I like the hard stuff. I like to read the really hard stuff. And I think that also, I mean, I'm writing about a war. You know, 80,000 to 100,000 people died in this war. It's not a subject that I could take lightly. It's not something I could come to without absolutely going to the places that I needed to go to tell that story. And, you know, the reality is like 100 times more brutal than what I wrote. Yeah, it's hard. I've had a lot of people be like, oh, this is beautiful, but it's heartbreaking. Like, it's really hard, you know. I've had a few criers. But how do you tell the story of a war without heartbreak? I couldn't do that.
Exactly. You cannot tell the story of war without heartbreak. And this is an amazing novel, Island of a Thousand Mirrors, that tells that story, that represents the 80,000 to 100,000 people that died in the conflict.
Naomi, what are you working on now?
I have most of a second novel, which Tara has seen because I workshopped at Bona, and it is about a Sri Lankan housemaid in Saudi Arabia. And I've sort of put it aside because I think I need to go to Saudi Arabia. So until that happens, it's in a drawer. And I'm working on my third novel, which is about, I suppose it's about what happens when the American dream goes horribly, horribly, horribly wrong. It's about a Sri Lankan woman who comes here and et cetera, et cetera. I can't reveal too much right now.
And I know you have a bunch of events coming up in the Bay. You have a book release party. You have a reading at UC Berkeley. You're curating an event, The Bloom, next week. Break it down. How can people come up and you can meet Naomi in the flesh?
All right. So I have a bunch of events in October. October 18th, I'm giving a talk at UC Berkeley Center for South Asian Studies. And that will be a 45-minute lecture and a 30-minute Q&A and then wine and cheese. So, you know, come and eat wine and cheese.
Is it free?
Yes.
All these events are free?
Everything is free.
Everything is free.
Yes.
So people can donate to KPFA and go to your reading.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And then my big event is October 25th, Thursday. It's my book launch party and it is free at Biso Baobab, which is a Senegalese restaurant. Total local hotspot in San Francisco. It's on 19th and Mission from 7 to 10. I'll be doing a short reading and then signing books. And then the very talented DJ Cecil from the People Party in Oakland. You guys should know that. And a really amazing singer called Naima will be joining me. So please come out. It's also free October 25th at Biso Baobab.
Do we get to dance? Will there be dancing?
Absolutely. Nice. DJ Cecil will rock the house, so yes.
Wonderful. Yes. And all of these events, if people missed them, they can catch them on your website?
Yes, my website, so my very long name, www.naomi, which is N-A-Y-O-M-I, Munavera, MUNAWEERA.com. And then my book is also on Amazon, and books should be available very soon.
Give out the website just one more time.
NaomiMunavera.com, NaomiMunaweera.com.
And Naomi, in our last couple minutes, what did you hope to achieve when you set out to write this novel?
Oh my God, I started writing this book 10 years ago and I was like, I'm going to write a novel. I have no idea what that means. And it just came to me. It's sort of, as you said, the story sort of grabbed me and I never knew if it would be in print. It took me 5 years to write. I didn't dare hope that it would actually be a book at some point. So, what did I hope to accomplish? Just to get the story out. And it's just absolutely miraculous that it's made its way into print. I'm just blown away by all of this.
And you said, so those were your local dates, but then you're also going to be doing a book tour internationally.
Yes. So since my book is actually published by a Sri Lankan publishing house, it's coming out in India. It's coming out in Sri Lanka, Singapore, and Australia by my Sri Lankan publisher. And then Hatchet Books, Hatchet India, is releasing it in India.
What's the timing on all of that?
It will be out in Sri Lanka, Singapore, and Australia in the next 2 weeks. And then India early next year.
Right. And so you're touring?
Yes, I will be in India and Sri Lanka January, February, March of next year.
Congratulations. I mean, I've known you for a while now, and to have this in my hands and to see the silver embossing on it and, you know, to hear you read those passages, it's just a great honor and I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. It's really sweet.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us too during this time live.
Excellent. Thank you so much, you guys.
You just heard author of Island of a Thousand Mirrors, Naomi Munawira, speak with No No Girl and Tara Darabji from Apex Express. This interview originally aired on Apex Express earlier this month, which you can hear on KPFA every Thursday evening at 7 p.m.